Radio.
The Apocalypse of the Mass by Dr. Matthew Tan.
Now, when people hear titles like this for the first time, they often get somewhat perplexed, if not completely scandalized. What do you mean, end of the world? They scream in shock. Don't we have enough death and destruction going on with the world without you talking about the destruction of the world and implicating the Mass at that? Or words to that effect. Popular takes on words can often lead to awkward conversations, and the word apocalypse is one example of this. If anyone came with the expectation of lectures of how the end of the world was nigh, I will quite sorely disappoint. Now, whilst the word apocalypse can have implications concerning the long-term welfare of God's creation, it has a much broader meaning than the popular definition suggests. Now today, what I want to focus on is the primary meaning of the word apocalypse, that is, uncovering or revelation. My argument here is that the Mass is apocalyptic not because it ends the world, but because it uncovers something about the world and reveals the world for what it really is. Now the starting point for this presentation will be the central theme of what is arguably the most popular English language book on the apocalyptic dimension of the Mass, namely Scott Hahn's The Lamb's Supper, The Mass as Heaven on Earth. Now in it, Hahn refers to an episode whereby, in describing their first experience of the Christian Eucharist, the emissaries of the Russian Emperor Vladimir remarked that they didn't know whether they were in heaven or on earth. Hahn sees this as indicative of the heavenly nature of the Mass itself. Every time we go to Mass, we are given an experience of heaven. To quote Hebrews chapter 12, verse 22, when you go to the Mass, you have, quote, come to Mount Zion and to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, to an innumerable company of angels, to the general assembly and the church of the firstborn who are registered in heaven, unquote. Why is this the case? Because when we participate in the one eternal sacrifice being offered by Jesus Christ, the high priest, we are participating in a sacrifice in which, to quote Hebrews chapter 9, verse 11, Christ enters the greater, more perfect sanctuary, not made by human hands, not of this created order, unquote. Taking this theme of arriving in heaven as a starting point, Hahn looks at how each stage of the Mass parallels an unfolding in an episode in the book of Revelation. The Lamb's Supper is one of the most thrilling pieces of contemporary scriptural exegesis currently available. However, what it does not tell us, having pointed out the parallels of the book of Revelation, is just what the book of Revelation tells us about our world, or what we can find out about our world when it is seen through the lens of the Mass. I wish to state here that the Mass is not a means to score brownie points in heaven. Rather, I wish to state that, having got to heaven, the participant in the Mass is given a privileged standpoint, and the Mass is thus a context within which the world around him can be interpreted. Or more specifically, the Mass can be seen as a lens whereby one is able to see the world as it really is. Now, what should the real world appear as when we refract it through the lens of the Mass? Well, arguably the primary thing the participant will be reminded of is that from the viewpoint of heaven, the real world that we see, touch, and engage on a daily basis is actually not the real world. To give this a philosophical footing, it is good to consider Plato's metaphysical framework on where ultimate reality lies. And considering much of the theology of the early church would have been influenced by Platonic philosophy in the first place, it's probably just as well. For Plato, reality lies not in the temporal sphere. For the things and people one experiences are but only appearances of reality. Instead, Plato locates reality in the forms, ideal entities that transcend the temporal sphere. The temporal sphere, therefore, only gets its reality from the fact that it participates or shares, albeit incompletely, in shades and fragments, it participates and shares in the absolute reality of the transcendent sphere. Now, this metaphysical framework is a useful aid in seeing just what the Mass is. The sacrifice taking place on the altar in space and time, as the presbyter says in the first Eucharistic prayer, becomes such only because it participates in the sacrifice taking place in the altar in heaven, outside of space and time. The Mass is apocalyptic because it uncovers or reveals first and foremost just where the real world lies. The real world lies not in the temporal realm, or more specifically, the temporal realm does not get its reality in and of itself. Its having any notion of reality comes from the fact that the temporal participates in the transcendent, or more specifically, participates in God. For as Paul reminded the Athenians in the Acts of the Apostles, chapter 17, verse 28, it is only in God that creation lives and moves and has its being. The temporal sphere thus cannot be so arrogant as to claim to be its own ultimate reality, independent of the reality in the transcendent sphere. In Platonic terms, when the temporal is cut off from the transcendent, the world descends into becoming a mere illusion of reality, a virtual reality, rather than reality itself. Framed in terms of the movie The Matrix, one can argue that the world cut off from God is the virtual world of The Matrix, while in the context of the Mass, part of the salvific work of Christ through the Eucharistic host plays itself out in his acting as a kind of heavenly Morpheus that provides each and every one of us with a heavenly red pill that in turn aids us to see through the illusions and gaze, albeit incompletely, into the realities of this world. Or as the Gospel of Matthew chapter 13 verse 35 calls it, the things hidden since the foundation of the world. At the same time as Christ in the Mass uncovers the real world for us, Christ also uncovers a whole world of meaning for us to appreciate within the context of the temporal sphere itself. For if the heavenly realities that transcend the temporal and are therefore more than what the temporal world can encapsulate, what we encounter in the temporal world can no longer be regarded as complete, self-enclosed things that secular culture makes them out to be. Rather, in phenomenological terms, the Mass uncovers new realities that lie beyond what is evident in the phenomenon. A world without God is a world obsessed with surfaces, and a culture without God is unable to make sense of the world beyond its apparent phenomena. When the world sees the phenomenon of tragedy, for instance, the totality of the reality that the world sees is nothing but tragedy. What Christ does in the Mass in the act of uncovering where the real world lies is also uncovering the realities that lie beyond the phenomena. And so where the world sees the phenomenon of tragedy, for example, and would have us believe that a story is about to end, Christ's act of uncovering also reveals the hidden chapters in the story that are yet to be told. Tragedy does not have the last say. What this act of Christ's uncovering of the real world does is enable a rebellion against the powers and principalities of this world, who deign to use the incomplete evidence of the phenomenon that they see to blind us to the reality that we, if only for a moment, cannot see. We experience this in the context of the Mass in the Liturgy of the Word, when, in the midst of the same repetitious pattern of tragedy and destruction that makes itself apparent to us time and time again, we are told by the prophets, "See, I am doing a new thing," and chiding us for not being able to see it. In the Eucharist, we see not only the world as it really is. Christ's act of uncovering also reveals ourselves as we really are. Much to the chagrin of many, we are never ourselves outside the context of the Mass. And seen in light of the uncovering by the Mass, we are never what the world will make us out to be. While the world will make us out to be independent, and as the German philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche would have us call it, all too human, Christ's act of uncovering reveals us to be fully dependent on Christ himself for our very being. In addition, contrary to Friedrich Nietzsche's claim, Christ becoming man and transposing himself in the Eucharistic host reveals for us the template of the true man. Before the Eucharistic host, our fallenness is seen not as the result of being all too human, but the result of not being human enough. As was mentioned in the first seminar, it is in the Eucharistic host that all of reality is revealed to us, the world and ourselves. This is why Augustine often calls the body of Christ, the Eucharistic host, as who you are, unquote. Indeed, the Mass is the context whereby we are given glimmers of who we are in the light of Christ, the true man. The Mass, in conclusion, is apocalyptic, not just because it announces its absolute end. Rather, it is apocalyptic because it exposes many pretenses that the world cut off from God presents to us on a daily basis. Our Mass going is therefore important, not because it gives us a boost to deal with the real world, but because it constantly reminds us that what we negotiate through every day is not really real. To paraphrase the blogger Bad Catholic, each gesture, each sign of the cross, each genuflection, every word we hear in the readings, and each Eucharistic host we receive constitutes a rebellion against the finality of what the real world says it brings. For in the context of the Lamb's Supper, Christ reveals bit by bit what the real world is until the end of our earthly pilgrimage, when the real world is uncovered in its totality, and we find that in the words of Paul's first letter to the Corinthians, the real world is revealed to be Christ himself, put before us face to face. Thank you.
That was Dr. Matthew Tan with the Apocalypse of the Mass. For more talks, interviews, and shows, visit cradio.org.au.